Today, inside Afghanistan as US troops prepare to leave after America's longest war. And just a warning before we start, there are descriptions of violence in this episode that some people might find distressing. Fawzia Koofi is an Afghan politician who for the past few years has been one of the only women negotiating in peace talks with the Taliban. Last August, she was travelling with her daughter when she was attacked.
I was coming from a province from northern Afghanistan. It was around 7 p.m., 20 minutes away from Kabul. One black car was chasing us, and when we realized that the car is actually chasing us, we wanted to speed up. The moment we wanted to speed, the black car took over and stopped my car, and then the other car from backside shoot. I was lucky because I was injured in my right arm, and the next three more bullets, it got to the car, but not to anybody. So then the good thing was that my driver speed up, and after a few seconds, I think, I realized that I'm injured because it was bleeding. And it's interesting because when they shoot the first time, you don't feel it. It doesn't hurt. After a few seconds, probably, then I realized that my right shoulder is bleeding. And then I told my daughter that I think I'm injured. My daughter was also sitting with me. And of course, as a daughter, this was her biggest fear, that she might be with me when something happened, because I was always the target. And so, of course, it was a moment of shock. But in the meantime, I kept thinking to myself, who can be this? This was the time that the driver was really driving in a speed. And I start thinking to myself that what did I do wrong that these people could go so brutal to the extent that they want to kill me?
The Taliban has denied being behind Fawzia's shooting. But just weeks after it happened, she was once again face to face with them at negotiations, trying to reach an agreement to bring stability to Afghanistan. Fawzia is hopeful this can be achieved, but time is now running out. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, Joe Biden is taking US troops out of Afghanistan. But what are they leaving behind? Julian Borger, you're The Guardian's World Affairs editor, and I think to understand the context to the US troop withdrawal from Afghanistan that's happening in September, we need to look back at the peace talks that have been happening in the country for the past couple of years. What have they achieved?
Yes, first of all, the US did a deal with the Taliban in February last year, in which the basic agreement was that if the US withdrew its forces, then the Taliban would sit down with the Afghan government and other Afghan civil society groups and talk about the political future of the country. They wouldn't carry out attacks on US and allied coalition troops, and that there would be a release of prisoners on both sides. And there was believed to be a secret annex to that agreement that the Taliban would not carry out major attacks on provincial capitals. So the deal was that the talks between the Taliban and the Afghan government were to start very soon after that deal.
That deal was hugely significant at the time, but it wasn't one that involved the Afghan government, who weren't part of these negotiations. How did they feel about that?
The Ashraf Ghani government was taken aback by this news that this deal was going to be done. Ultimately, though, they were reassured that it would be conditions-based, that if the Taliban didn't sit down and negotiate and did not scale back their attacks, this US withdrawal would be paused.
Right, so the Afghan government was given reassurance that the US would only withdraw troops if there were substantive peace talks between them and the Taliban. Those talks began in Doha last September.
A Quran recitation to start the event many Afghans have been waiting for decades. Face-to-face peace talks between the government and the Taliban.
What did they hope to achieve?
They were aimed at creating a framework for a new Afghanistan that involved power sharing, that involved a political settlement in place of the war that had been going on for 20 years. The problem was, ultimately, there was a question of to what extent the Taliban were serious. I mean, their aim was to get the Americans out of the country.
Fawzia, you were at those talks in Doha negotiating on behalf of the Afghan government, and these were happening just weeks after you'd been shot. Did you find out who was behind your attack?
The investigation that was conducted by our security forces, I mean, intelligence, etc., they said that it was a terroristic attack. As if I didn't know it was a terroristic attack. No more details.
I'm laughing, but of course it's not funny, but I think you probably could have worked that out yourself without...
I was laughing myself too.
Many suspect that the Taliban might be responsible, and they had made an attempt on your life in 2010. Now you were sitting across the table from them at these negotiations. What was that like for you?
Most often I feel powerful because I think only 20 years back, they were the same people that were not even recognizing women as equal rights holders. They were not even allowing women to get out to do basic things, to go to a doctor without a male companion, because the existence of a woman was not something that was acceptable. So to be across the table, and instead of using guns, you could just use words, and even more, have the legitimacy to represent the people. And sometimes, or most of the times, actually, I was the only woman in the room. And of course, it is a struggle to make your voice heard, to make your point get through to the draft agreements, etc. That really is a continued struggle that I have been doing all my life.
It must have been very challenging negotiating with the Taliban like this. Did you feel that you made any progress?
The Taliban started to engage with us. I remember one of those guys, actually, initially when he was coming to the room and I was speaking, he will try to hide his face so that he doesn't see my face while I was speaking, because probably for him, it was against his beliefs that he looks at an Afghan Muslim woman while she's speaking. Over time, I think over 2 months, we were negotiating. This guy, one day, he called me by my name and said, "Sister Kofi." That gives me a sense that if Taliban become part of a society, part of a power sharing where they see transformed Afghanistan, they work with women, they work with youth, probably they will be integrated into the society. That was my hope.
Gillian, Fawzia has told us about the progress she felt she was making with the Taliban at these talks, but this is a far cry from what relations between the two sides have been like recently. How stable has the country been over the past couple of years?
Across large parts of the country, life has definitely improved. Just look at the number of children who go to school. It's now 9 million. That's 9 times more than it was in 2001. There didn't used to be any girls in school, hardly at all. And now over 40% of Afghan school children are girls. So there are real noticeable gains across lots of the country. But on the other hand, in large parts of the country, there are still attacks going on all the time. And what is most alarming is the increase in targeted attacks, assassinations. And so as a result, the number of women casualties has increased, because women officials and women in key roles in their villages or towns become targets for attacks attributed to the Taliban.
Seconds after Zakaria Haravi left this house to go to work, her brother heard the gunshots.
I felt as though the ground fell away below me and the sky fell. When I saw her, I knew she was gone.
She was a Supreme Court judge and a breadwinner. Every man in this room relied on her to support them and their children.
This tactic to scare off not just women officials, but journalists and civil society activists is perhaps the most worrying trend of 2020. That seems to reflect a Taliban strategy of getting rid and scaring off those people who would insist that the social gains achieved over the last 20 are baked into any deal with them.
Fazia, these attacks on women like yourself are devastating, especially when you consider that one of the aims of the US and their allies when they first entered Afghanistan all those years ago was to improve the lives of women in the country. Why is it that they are being targeted like this now?
The world actually reduced its support to empowerment of women. And that actually has, I think, a backlash because women issue has become a matter of revenge between Taliban and the government of Afghanistan and international community. So Taliban and other military extremists, in this case, the Daesh, in order to show their power, they wanted to target one of the biggest achievements of the international community, which was women's empowerment and liberty. If the women are not safe, if the women are not included in law, that means the country will not be safe. That means the rule of law will not be implemented. That means Afghanistan once again can be used as a safe haven to insecure the world.
Julian, how much power and influence do the Taliban have in Afghanistan right now?
At the same time as these attacks, the Taliban have been recapturing territory, especially in the south and the east.
But now it's coming closer to the main city, Afghanistan's second largest after the capital, Kabul. Heavy fighting between government forces and the Taliban is now only 8 kilometers away from Kandahar city.
On top of the territory that they directly control, they can also threaten and have an effect on the lives of a far greater number of Afghans. It's been estimated that over 70% of the population is vulnerable to the Taliban at one time or another.
How is it, Julian, that 20 years after the US first arrived in Afghanistan, that the Taliban have been able to regain this power in the country?
Well, in a way, the problem began at the very beginning. After the invasion by the George W. Bush administration, there was this quick pivot to Iraq. And so there wasn't that follow-up of investment and people seeing immediate benefits of a new government, of the presence of US troops. And Joe Biden, who was then in the Senate, was one of the people who complained the loudest about how the US had gone in 2001 and then left again and not followed up.
But the follow-through commitment to Afghanistan's security and reconstruction has fallen very short. Our failure to extend security beyond Kabul has handed most of the country back to the warlords. The Taliban is regrouping.
One other element has been the US presence itself. This continuing presence has been a thorn in the side of ordinary Afghans. This idea that they're under foreign occupation has proved to be a regular and consistent recruiting tool for the Taliban. And maybe thirdly is the failures, political failures of the governments in Kabul. There is a long history of deep ingrained corruption. So there is this long-term disillusion among Afghan people in a government in Kabul they see as being feckless and being held in power by the presence of foreign troops.
Okay, so what you've described is a very turbulent situation in Afghanistan, which is the backdrop to these talks that have been going on in Doha. At the start of this year, where had those negotiations between the Taliban and the Afghan government got to?
By the start of the year, the two sides had agreed to put aside some procedural issues that had bogged down the talks for the end of 2020 and to get on to the hard stuff, the discussions on what a new Afghan political system would look like. But then they were interrupted again, most likely because the Taliban wanted to see whether the Biden administration would follow through on what Trump had agreed to do, i.e. pull out all the troops by May.
Good afternoon, and we're coming on the air at this hour with breaking news involving U.S. troops in Afghanistan. President Biden is set to announce the apparent end to America's longest war.
We cannot continue the cycle of extending or expanding our military presence in Afghanistan, hoping to create ideal conditions for the withdrawal and expecting a different result. It's time for American troops to come home.
Joe Biden, then, has now committed to September the 11th as the date. He will withdraw the 2,500 US troops that are currently in Afghanistan. What made him come to that decision?
Biden had become convinced himself that this idea that any withdrawal would be conditions-based was just a hostage to fortune, that the conditions would never be right for a withdrawal. There would never be a perfect time to pull out. And he, having gone through 20 years of the Afghan war, but more importantly, seen the rise of deep disillusion, this feeling that the US is involved and has been involved for the past two decades in these forever wars that never seem to have an outcome. And so it was a political decision taken by Joe Biden, even before he was elected, that the withdrawal from Afghanistan would be one Trump legacy that he would continue. It was significant. Last year, there was this interview with Biden on that campaign trail, and he was asked straight out, do you feel any responsibility for what will happen to women in Afghanistan if the U.S. withdraws its troops? And he said zero responsibility.
No, I gave the answer. Do I bear responsibility? Zero responsibility. Mm-hmm. The responsibility I have is to protect America's national self-interest and not put our women and men in harm's way to try to solve every single problem in the world by use of force. That's my responsibility.
Gosh.
And that was a really striking change. And you could see in the changing views of Joe Biden an evolution of attitudes towards humanitarian intervention as a whole among American liberals.
Well, I can say that it is a moral defeat on the part of the United States. And I remember when the Soviets withdrew from Afghanistan, how the institutions collapsed, which led to civil war, and then the emerge of Taliban. This is a scenario we want to avoid because we have really invested blood and treasure in the past 20 years. All of that was because we were partner in a common fight to establish democracy, to make Afghanistan a better place, not a place anymore for military extremism, but a place that could be a reliable partner for the world and a safe place for its citizens. At the end of the day, now the US wants to withdraw no matter what, before even a political settlement is agreed upon. I'm worried, like thousands and hundreds of thousands of other Afghans. But again, I do not want to be totally pessimistic. I think we still have 4 months that the United States, the European countries, the neighboring countries, the region could use to bring Taliban to the negotiation table really in a meaningful way and agree on a political settlement before the complete withdrawal.
Coming up, what the withdrawal of US troops could mean for peace talks and for the future of Afghanistan. Julian, Fauzia remains hopeful that a political settlement with the Taliban can be reached before the US withdrawal at upcoming talks in Istanbul. How do you think things might play out?
At the moment, I don't think it's looking good. The Taliban have said they're not going to attend the talks in Istanbul. They are saying they're very angry that the timetable for the US withdrawal has been pushed back from May to September. So it seems unlikely at the moment the Taliban are going to come back to the negotiating table. And there are strong reasons to believe that the Taliban themselves believe that a military victory is now in their grasp, and that the optimists take the words of the Taliban leaders at their face value, and they point to the Taliban saying that they want to do it differently this time. They want to play a role in Afghanistan, but they don't want to be a pariah again. And this is seen by the optimists, certainly in Washington, as the remaining US and Western leverage that they can determine whether a government with Taliban in it is a pariah on the international stage. And that, they believe, is a deterrent to the Taliban going for an all-out military victory.
The reason US forces entered Afghanistan was because it was where 9/11 was coordinated from. And at the time, they set out to quash terrorist forces. Now that the troops are leaving, can Biden say that that mission has been accomplished?
He has said it has been accomplished and that there is no longer a significant threat from al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. And that was the narrow aim, to withdraw that threat. Of course, The danger now and the political risk that Biden runs is that that threat may return. The Taliban have promised that they will cut off their relations with Al-Qaeda. They don't have good relations with ISIS, but ISIS has a role in the country. But it's not clear to what extent, A, they have cut off that relationship, and B, whether once the US is out of the country, they can enforce that element of the deal that Al-Qaeda should not return. Because the great fear is that Afghanistan once again becomes this training camp where attacks on the US and the West can be planned and prepared for. And there's a question over to what extent the Biden plan of staying in the region and hitting Al-Qaeda training camps if they pop up, whether that is feasible, whether you can do that from outside the country without having all the intelligence and the partners and the allies and the connections that you have by being there.
Your daughter, Fawzia, who was in that car with you when you were shot last August, is 21. Do you feel hopeful that she will be able to live a happy life in Afghanistan in the future?
That has been my struggle, Rachel. My struggle has been to change this country, if I can, along with my other sisters and male colleagues, to a better place for our daughters, for the future of Afghanistan. Because I think this country is enormous in its capacity. The youth of this country, if you just give them an opportunity, a small opportunity, they will grab it. This country, as you know, is a rich country in terms of its location, in terms of natural resources, in terms of its young population, very talented population also. These are all good things that we could use to change the country. And I'm still hoping, but for me and for many women, the fact that we have grown up during war and our political career started during war, it was not a matter of choices and life. It was a matter of survival. Survive one coup, another military attack, another assassination attempt, another government change, another civil war. Event after event, we had to survive. I hope that for my daughter and for my daughters and for the girls of Afghanistan, who are all my daughters and sisters, they will not struggle between survival and living. They will choose to live.
Fawzia, thank you very much for speaking to me.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you so much.
That was Fawzia Kufi and Julian Borgia. Read more of his reporting on the US withdrawal from Afghanistan at theguardian.com, where you can also listen back to an episode we made with Fawzia in 2019 called Talking to the Taliban, Peace at What Price? Which I'd really recommend for more context on what's been happening in the country over the past few years. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Kakutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.